First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Empty store shelves, purchase limits on important items, hoarding. What's going on with the nation's supply chain? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a nice weekend. Just ahead this Monday morning, we've got a closer look at all of the problems buying and shipping what you need right now and at the holidays. What are your questions about the supply chain mess? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, fake vaccination cards are making the rounds and they're hard to spot. We'll tell you how you can pick one out and also why faking these cards or a negative COVID test could really get you in some legal trouble. That's coming up later, but first this hour, brace yourself, everybody. It's going to be very hard to find everything you want for the holidays, not just those food baskets and toys and gifts that you like to send, but staples like coffee, footwear, toilet paper, pasta. Supply chain problems are snarling everything up right now, and here's some more bad news. You can expect a whole lot more of this, at least through the spring. As just one example, retailer Costco says they are reinstating purchase limits on products like toilet paper, bottled water, and paper towels due to a host of supply chain challenges. It got us to wondering what's driving all of this. So we're pleased to welcome Tim Gibbons, editor at the Jacksonville Business Journal. He's on the line with a few insights. Hi, Tim.
How are you doing this morning?
Good to have you. So folks, are you having trouble getting things mailed? Are you seeing shortages on store shelves? Are you worried your holiday gifts might not get to your loved ones in time? We're talking about supply chain issues on the show this morning. Give us a call with your questions, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jax. So Tim, this is affecting everything from renting a car to construction materials, books, toilet paper, you name it. The supply chain just isn't working as it's supposed to. And I guess the easy assumption is that this is being driven by problems around the pandemic. But it goes a little deeper than that, doesn't it? Can you explain what's going on with the supply chain?
In your introduction, when you talked about what's causing all of this, the answer basically is everything.
Great.
There's a bunch of different inputs that are all snarled up at the same time, which is creating compounding problems. One of the things that listeners have to realize when we say the supply chain is not working in the way that it should, you know, it's the way that it has worked for the past decent number of years. But, you know, for those of us who are a bit older, the supply chain of our childhood had much more slack in it, was much more, stores would have things in the back and would bring it out. And we've moved to a just-in-time, everything's coming in on a very tight schedule sort of approach to logistics. And that change means that when you have an issue, it starts rippling through everything. So just to use an example, if you were going to drink away your supply chain, that would be a problem because alcohol in many areas is hard to come by. It was becoming harder. I shouldn't say it's not like it's gone, but in the case of booze, you have things like the glass bottles. The factories are overwhelmed, so the bottle supplies are low. The actual manufacturing of the alcohol itself, they might be having trouble hiring workers, so their production is lower. The truck drivers, there's a perennial truck driver shortage, so getting it from a port to a warehouse to a store might have a snag. So you look at something, just one product, where you can have three or four different things that are just kind of gumming up the works.
549-2937. And of course, Jacksonville is a major transportation and logistics hub with Jacksport, and we also sit at the intersection of I-10 and I-95. There are a lot of logistics companies dotting the region. How is this affecting our area specifically, and what are these experts telling you?
One of the things that local trucking companies are doing, for example, is turning water technology, trying to do what they can just to be basically as efficient as possible. When you think of the supply chain, we've all kind of gotten trained for second-day delivery. We've gotten trained for instant gratification. If you're buying, you know, a digital good, you're used to pushing a button and it just shows up. And if you're buying from most online retailers now, it shows up within, you know, a day or two. So it's very important for these service providers to be as efficient as possible, which requires some creative thinking. It is not an easy business to be in right now to make sure that the actual logistics, moving of goods part of the supply chain, is moving as efficiently as possible. If you look at just the influx of goods, I was looking at some data over the weekend that imports from Asia to the U.S. increased by 32% in the first 7 months of the year compared to the year before, and still about a quarter higher than they were pre-COVID. So just picture everything, all of those 20-foot or 40-foot containers coming from Asia, there's just more of them. So you end up with the ports in Asia are congested. There's like 100 ships sitting at anchor in the port of Shanghai right now. Port of Long Beach in California, where many of those goods come in, has just massive congestion. And all of that ripples through trying to get goods to the consumer.
So we've been hearing a lot in the last few days that if you want to send holiday gifts to loved ones, you should send them now. You know,
well, you're not done already?
I know. What is today? What is today's date? September 27th.
It's almost Halloween. Your Christmas shopping should be done.
You know, and I received one of those catalogs in the mail a little early this year. So something actually did get to me that was supposed to in the mail. I was flipping through it and I saw a couple of things that I thought would work for my parents. But then I thought, do I really need to order this right now? And I guess the answer is yes.
Yes. So because that hits the other part of just moving stuff around. So UPS is looking to hire something like 1,700 seasonal workers in Jacksonville. FedEx is hiring hundreds more. The getting of goods to people's houses, getting it across the country, you know, forget getting the thing to the U.S. and onto a store shelf. Just that last mile of shipping is a very manpower intensive sort of thing. So I don't know, you go back a couple years and before we got used to two-day shipping, think of the number of people who would wrap their Christmas shopping up on Black Friday, you know, right after Thanksgiving, you get all your Christmas shopping done. I'll admit I've waited until, you know, December 22nd to order something.
Wait a minute. You, a man in America, waited until the last minute to send gifts. I'm shocked by this. I really am.
It doesn't have the same energy as going out Christmas shopping
on Christmas Eve.
You know, that has a certain just, you know, drive to it. But
I'm already getting tweets about this. Here's one from Abel Harding, a friend of the show. He says, my plan this year is just cold hard cash. That's what I'm giving people to avoid all of these problems.
Abel has my address, I hope.
Exactly. This is serious, though. And, you know, before we go to calls, 549-2937 to join us. What about the thought that this is simply laying bare systemic problems, which we've ignored for a long time? You know, the questions we're now looking at, should we raise the federal minimum wage? Should we raise wages generally? What about more support for childcare, paid family leave, beefing up public transportation, fixing immigration, and, of course, dealing with climate change? Severe weather events are rupturing the supply chain around the world. Shouldn't we be looking at all of this as a whole?
I mean, that is the issue of the supply chain. One of the interesting things about talking to people in the logistics business is they're connected to all points of this. So, you know, you talk about coffee. There was a unseasonable weather in Brazil drove the commodity price of coffee up. I think it was 25 or 30%. You know, you have weather impacts that impact how ships can move. You have the shortage of workers in warehouses that becomes an issue. It is the supply chain is a system. It's all interconnected. It's all a web. And the things on that affect one bit of it affect another. The other part is, and I don't know if this is a problem laid bare so much as a people who are responsible for moving goods around have gotten very good at their job and have made it very efficient, which means that there's very little slack in the system, which in a good time is fine. But when all of these different problems crop up at the same time, trucker shortages and port congestion and difficulty in getting chassis for hauling trailers, and there's 100 different things that you could list, but not all hits at the same time, it really, really messes things up.
We're speaking with Tim Gibbons, editor at the Jacksonville Business Journal. In case you hadn't heard, the global supply chain is so broken right now that only the biggest stores are going to be able to store sufficient inventory. Giants like Walmart and Home Depot are chartering their own vessels to get around these supply chain issues. We're a supply chain and logistics hub here in Jacksonville, of course. So what are your questions? 549-2937. Brittany in Intercoastal West. Hi, Brittany. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering how much the restriction of immigration has impacted supply chain, you know, both for people who work in logistics and people who work in manufacturing. They're having difficulty hiring people.
Sure. Let's talk about that. Immigration, Tim, we mentioned is one piece of this puzzle. How big a piece?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, obviously, there's longstanding laws about hiring workers and who is allowed to work in the country. And a lot of times the shocks that we see when immigration is restricted are more on the agricultural side. So I'm not sure how much the immigration issue hits on the warehouse side of things. I'm sure it plays a role, though.
And so as a business editor, is the solution to raise the minimum wage? Would that help with the labor shortages that we're currently seeing?
That's yet another, you know, complicated thing that if you talk to business owners, they would say that raising the minimum wage is just going to end up increasing the prices that consumer pay, and in some cases might lead to just more automation. So studies are kind of all over the place on the impact of raising the minimum wage, in part because what do you raise it to is a big question. Obviously, Florida has the increase to $15 that is we're on the path toward, which will have an impact, it is assumed, on hiring issues. But you also have, you know, just there's only so many people who want to work these jobs, whatever the wage is. I mean, I've talked to truck drivers who will say that there's not a truck driver shortage, there's a truck driver payment issue. But again, all of those costs end up being passed down to the consumer at the end, which can create its own issues.
Now, getting back to AI, humanoid robots may be coming in to compensate for these shortages. A new product called Digit the Robot is supposed to be able to handle last mile deliveries and warehouse jobs like climbing ladders and picking up boxes. Automation, increased automation of these kinds of jobs is a little farther down the path, but it's going to play a big role in how the workforce continues to change. Yes?
Absolutely. I mean, it will change across a range of industries, and that's actually one of the, moving away from the supply chain issues for a moment, I mean, that's going to be one of the employment major storylines of the next decade, is the number of jobs that automated intelligence, machine learning will play into taking care of things, taking care of jobs, taking over jobs that we might have thought were safe. It's not an apocalyptic future. I mean, you know, things like self-driving trucks have been 20 years away for the past, you know, 20 years sort of thing. But it will be a shock to the economy. It will be disruptive to many people as we see what jobs can be done by technology. But if you're a business who is looking for ways to get a job done and you're having trouble hiring, many times the answer is to look for a technological solution.
Marilyn emails the show, I haven't had any delay experiences with the U.S. Postal Service. I mailed a package from Palm Coast to Portland, Oregon last week, and it got there 3 days later. Marilyn, I'm so glad to hear that. You know, I sent a package via UPS, and it's weeks now, and it still hasn't gotten to its destination. 549-2937, Mariah in Riverside. Mariah, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to do a little plug for local shopping this holiday season. It sort of cuts out the transit. You don't have to wait. You can send something directly yourself, and it helps support the local economy.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you said that, Mariah. We try to plug shopping local as often as we possibly can. Tim, she's absolutely right. Now, the retail giants are going to try to find ways to keep the supplies moving, but it's so true that if you go to a local business with locally made products, you are driving the local economy and you are avoiding some of these problems.
Yeah, you absolutely are. And you also have the peace of mind of if you physically go to a local retailer, you can see what they have in stock. You know, you're not hitting that button and then finding out that it's back ordered. And in that case, though, I would still say shop early, because being a local retailer these days is a very it's a challenging business. Keeping their stock levels where they want them to be. Obviously, if you as a consumer are ordering something online and you're seeing supply chain issues, you can imagine if you're a retailer trying to make sure that you have, particularly holiday shopping, peak season goods in stock, you need to know what to order and you need to order it in plenty of time. So, you know, I've talked to retailers who they started placing their holiday orders for this year basically at the end of last year, because they could see what was coming. So giving those retailers the information they need to order what they need by shopping early helps them out a little bit.
5492937. You know, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that all of these issues are actually hobbling the efforts of small and mid-sized businesses across the U.S. to benefit from the economic recovery after a difficult year. The giants like Walmart and Amazon can restock quickly. They leave smaller fish to battle over dwindling cargo space on the ships coming in from Asia into Jack's port. So isn't right. This yet another squeeze on small business?
If you talk to a small business owner, they will say that the squeezes never stop coming. Mm-hmm. And because that is the issue that obviously you mentioned earlier, a Walmart chartering its own vessels or switching to a more expensive form of transportation because they can absorb the hit for a short while. That doesn't help you if you're a small local chain or you don't have the purchasing power or the shipping capabilities of one of the big players, which arguably could be another reason to spend your dollars locally.
By the way, we put out a shop local holiday gift guide at WJCT News every year, and we will be doing that in early December. Although, Tim, we probably need to do it much earlier this year than early December. I'm just now realizing.
Those of us in the gift guide business, actually, we have to adjust our timing as well.
Because,
the peak season, you know, for shipping usually starts soon, and it's already underway.
We're going to have to put this out in a few weeks. I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know how we're going to do it. Yeah. Honestly,
well, the other side effect of this is there's expected to be fewer deals this year because with demand being high and capacity being tight, you know, there's less of a need for retailers to slash prices to move stuff. So, if you're trying to save some money, shopping early, getting all those, you know, buying something when you see it on sale, will probably be better for your pocketbook.
You know. Do you feel that when it comes to the pandemic, the supply chain issues, our politics, everything, the Global Citizen event happened over the weekend, concerts around the world demanding attention must be paid to combating climate change, combating poverty, getting more vaccines out to the world. It feels as though we really are, Tim, at a hinge point in history, and we don't know yet which way it's going to jump, but there's just enormous pressure building up for systemic change in so many spheres.
We are an interconnected world, and there are, you know, many different things that are shocking the system. So yeah, all of them, you know, not just moving apart from actual the logistics system, just in general, it is a chaotic time.
Yeah. It really does feel that way. And I think it's causing so much anxiety for people. This is just one more thing. So as we talk about this, what is your advice to consumers out there? What do you think, like, for example, should I pick up this catalog today after speaking with you, place my orders, which is typically what I like to do, or should I maybe instead what I'll do is I will go buy a gift for someone at a local store, get it in the mail now? Should I just start sending things now? People are confused. They don't know what to do.
I think you should wait to Thanksgiving and get into a fist fight with somebody at at the mall. Because that's always a heartwarming thing around the holidays. You know, seeing people fight over
Where would we be without that?
Exactly. But no, exactly what you said. I mean, a lot of it is planning ahead. You know, if you are somebody for whom the holiday spirit is partially that rushing around last minute sort of thing, you know, put yourself in Christmas in September. And in some ways, this is the last minute time. It's not really. People shouldn't freak out. I mean, you still got a couple of weeks. But, you know, don't plan on ordering something in December 15th and expecting it to get there. Even if you are shopping locally and mailing it yourself, you probably want to add in some more time. I mean, the post office, the FedEx and UPS, they are expecting a massive surge in the number of packages they're dealing with. And there's only so many people to drive those trucks. So getting it done early, you know, sitting back with some eggnog, sipping it after your shopping list is done, or while you're doing your shopping list, it might get you in the holiday spirit, might be the way to go this year.
Good advice. Marcus emails the show, last night, Mitt Cafe had a maker's market. There was low turnout overall, but so many great vendors were featured. We hope more come to the next event. Thanks for that, Marcus. And as Tim is also saying, shop local every year, but especially this year. Not only will you be supporting our local business community, you will be sidestepping these really frustrating supply chain issues that are bedeviling the nation and the world. Danette tweets the show, this year I'm going to go thrift store shopping for my gifts. Oftentimes you can find much more meaningful gifts that way. Thanks for that, Danette. And Tim Gibbons, thanks to you, always providing great business insights for us on this show. Thanks for spending a little time with us today.
Happy holidays, Melissa.
Yeah. Tim Gibbons, editor at the Jacksonville Business Journal. Okay, and much more still ahead later in the hour. Unfortunately, the Jaguars came up short once again at home. That's later, but up next.
The FBI really started first warning about this in the spring when talk of potential mandates coming down in the future for people who have not received the vaccine and some concerns with them having to show proof of that really began.
Why fake vaccination cards are making the rounds and what the FBI says you need to know. We'll be right back. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Don't go away.
For the best music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, tune in to 89.9 HD3, the WJCT app, or jacksmusic.org. We've got your music on Anthology on 89.9 HD3.
WJCT Public Media is bringing you a new healthcare show, What's Health Got to Do with It? Our goal is to help you navigate all things health and healthcare and get you the answers you deserve. Join me, Dr. Joe Servin, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 9 p.m. on WJCT News 89.9, sponsored in part by American Brain Foundation, Epilepsy Foundation, and Norellis.
Welcome back. Well, fake vaccination cards are making the rounds, and so are fake COVID tests showing a negative result. These fakes are very tough to spot. They look almost like the real thing. But here's what you need to know. Using one of them is a federal crime, so don't even think about it. For more, I spoke with Amanda Vidal, public affairs officer with Jacksonville's FBI field office, and here's that conversation. Amanda, it's so good to be with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me today. I appreciate the time.
You know, this is really making the rounds, people trying to use fake COVID-19 vaccine cards, and they look real. So tell us how the FBI is responding to this.
Well, and you're right, a lot of them do look real, unfortunately, and that's causing a lot of issues across the country. And the FBI really started first warning about this in the spring when talk of potential mandates coming down in the future for people who have not received the vaccine and some concerns with them having to show proof of that really began. We knew this was going to be an issue. We anticipated it, and we've been warning very seriously about the criminal consequences that could come along with this. What the FBI, and I want to be clear about, we're not concerned with whether or not people received the vaccine. What we're concerned about is the knowing use of a fraudulent government document. And that's what vaccine cards are. They contain two seals of government agencies, the Department of Health and Human Services and the CDC. And when you create one of those documents and then falsify your vaccination record, you are actually using a false document and committing a federal crime.
Right. You could face real penalties if you're caught.
You absolutely could. We are looking at potential $5,000 fine and 5 years in prison just for either making one of these vaccine cards at home or even buying and then using it to falsify your vaccination record.
Okay, so obviously it's a bad idea to do this, and it's also a bad idea to try to profit by selling these fake products, also fake negative test results too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be another issue that entirely that we haven't even addressed, but that is emerging. And I think it's important to recognize that all of this is changing on a daily basis. And so, law enforcement is having to adjust our response to all of these things as they come about. But using any sort of fake document or fake government document utilizing one of these agency seals is really what our main focus is right now.
How can you tell, though, if one of these cards is fake? Say somebody presents a vaccine card, it looks real enough, the average person might not even be able to tell.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. And, until there's a digital system, which I think is in the talks right now, but until there's a digital system, we're going to see these cards continue to be created, continue to be cleaned up, if you will. But we do know already from the thousands of vaccine cards that our partners over at Customs and Border Protection have already seized coming into the country, that a lot of these cards are being created overseas. So just like you would in any other typical scam, you're going to look for grammar errors, you're going to look for incomplete sentences, you're going to look for spelling mistakes. Sometimes there's too much information that they include on there, too little information that we include on there. I know my vaccination card has handwriting on it. Most vaccination cards, legitimate vaccination cards, do have handwriting on them when people received those shots. And so some of the fake vaccine cards coming in are all printed using like a typeface. So that could be a red flag for them. If the dates on the card don't coincide with the actual vaccine rollout, that's a big red flag as well. And then, of course, the incorrect government seals. So take a look at what the HHS and the CDC government seals actually look like on their websites, and then compare that to a card that may have an altered seal. And what we think is that some of these fraudulent vaccine card makers are altering those seals in some sort of attempt to avoid law enforcement prosecution in the future. That's not going to work, but we have seen that as kind of a common trait among some of the vaccine cards, the fake vaccine cards.
And, of course, you should report a fake vaccine card to the FTC or the FBI.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can anytime you experience any sort of scam or fraud, you can report it to your local police department so that you have record of it. For the FBI, we have something called the Internet Crime Complaint Center, and this is a great center where when the tips come into it, we can put those together, we can link them together and potentially build federal cases. So that website for the Internet Crime Complaint Center is ic3.gov. And you can, again, report not just fake vaccine cards, but any type of scam or fraud that you see in your community. Department of Health and Human Services is another great resource. The CDC, the FTC, you can go to any one of these agencies to report your concern.
Amanda Vidal, she's public affairs officer with FBI's Jacksonville field office. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
When you're sharing something, teachers say you need to bring enough for the whole class, right? Well, I'm Ari Shapiro, kicking off the school year with a little history. NPR is celebrating 50 years of broadcasting this year. 5 decades of news, conversations, and stories from around the world. And there's something for everyone, because sharing is kind of our thing. NPR, hear every voice.
Here on WJCT News 89.9.
As engineers investigate what caused the Champlain Tower South condo building to collapse a few months ago in South Florida, tensions are building over what purpose the site should serve and what should happen where 98 people died. Some grieving family members say the land is a sacred space and should become a memorial. But as Veronica Zaragovia reports, the judge overseeing the sale is moving ahead with another plan.
After the disaster, attorney Michael Goldberg took on the job of managing all of the logistics of selling the property. And last week, he had an update for the judge.
Your Honor, another bit of significant news. I'm happy to report that yesterday we received a signed contract on the land. It is a stalking horse contract.
Stalking horse means this is an initial bid that sets up a timeline for an auction to happen next year, around February or March. They could get at least $120 million. That's the price an anonymous bidder offered recently. Miami-Dade Circuit Judge Michael Hansman is overseeing the collapse-related litigation and the sale of the property. He said maybe other interested buyers will offer even more money, but he cautioned families of victims against turning to the press to call for the land where their loved ones died to be preserved as a memorial.
The memorial is going to have to be on another site because I am not going to obligate a buyer who hopefully will pay up to $150 million for this property. I am not going to impose any conditions on that buyer as to what they can do with their asset.
He said people have a right to their opinions, but railing against a new condo building over sacred ground could mean families and survivors, including the critics, could get less money from selling the property.
They may be very well-intentioned, I assume they are, but they're doing harm because they're devaluing the property. They're scaring away potential bidders, and they're also making the land less valuable to those few that will bid.
He also said he hopes the quotes in the media stop.
We will knock every single door that we need to knock without turning away when we're being told no.
Martin Langesfeld said they're not going to stop.
Because we've been told no every day. And that has not stopped any of us. It's actually involved many more people.
Langesfeld's sister and brother-in-law died in the collapse. Langesfeld joined a group who gathered after the court hearing to make their case for the memorial.
It is horrifying that in a place where 98 people died, others want to build. Let me be very clear. We do not build over dead bodies.
A clergy member named Reverend Bill Minson tried to comfort them.
Get you what you need. Remember our prayers for you.
He said he's been traveling to disaster sites on anniversaries to pray with grieving families.
God bless everyone.
But the rest of the people that don't have a home, now I don't have a home. Where do I go?
Moshe Candioti said he needs to get money.
I don't have money. I'm in a hotel.
God will provide for you.
I know.
The rabbi says
I don't want donation.
Candioti is 67 and had fully paid off his unit, number 407. He rushed out in time to survive the collapse. Now, Candioti lives in a hotel room.
Everything collapsed. The building collapsed and my life, I feel my life also collapsed. And let's, if they build memorial, I'm happy with it. But at least give us the same money of the market value and build, and I'll come to take care of the garden too. I don't mind.
Judge Hansman scheduled a court hearing for later this week on the anonymous bidder's contract. The judge needs to approve it in order for the sale to proceed to a developer. I'm Veronica Saragovia in Miami.
Well, the Florida Theater in downtown Jacksonville has announced the debut of a new live performance series. Untold Stories will tap into the heart and soul of Northeast Florida storytellers with thematic story evenings. Theater President Numa Saisalin is on the line to tell us more. Hey, Numa.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. Good to talk to you. So this sounds really exciting, putting on the Florida Theater stage some of our most talented local artists and creators to keep alive the tradition of oral storytelling, but in a modern context, correct?
Absolutely correct. We know the Florida Theater as a place for national talent, and national talent know the Florida Theater as a place they can connect to Northeast Florida audiences, but we're always looking for ways to connect to the local community in a more meaningful way. And we're always looking for a way to round out our calendar and fill out some of the dark nights. And this is our latest effort at doing so. We envision a series of four performances every year with a set of five or six local storytellers on each performance, joined by a musical guest to add a little musical flavor. And we're really excited to have Barbara Colicello, who is well-known in the local theater community as a director, producer, and actor, and all-around creative brain, as the artistic director for the first year. And she's put together a series of four shows which we think are going to be exciting and are going to really connect to the local community in a big way.
Okay, so the first one is coming up right around Thanksgiving weekend, Saturday, November 27th. People need to mark their calendars for that. It's called Ebbs and Flows. That's the theme. Who's going to be on stage?
So Barbara has put together a set of six storytellers. The theme is Ebbs and Flows, which can mean almost anything. It could be the ebb and flow of the St. John's River, could be the ebb and flow of your life or your career. And we're really interested to see how people interpret the theme. The performers on this show are Willie Evans, who's a local mixed media artist, Adam Jacobson, who's been a 27-year educator and teacher, Zanetta Marie, who's an actress, Jonathan Ross, who's a local actor and writer, Angela Tenbrook, who is widely known in the local food movement, and Ted Garvalter, who is an artist who has shown at Art Basel Miami and a couple years ago won the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville's Emerging Artist of the Year Award. And it's a very interesting group of people to come and tell stories. Even if you're, say, an artist working in a visual medium, you still have a creative mind, and it's going to be really interesting to see how some of those people translate their own work into an oral format.
And this is Untold Stories. So these are stories that we don't know yet. Now, let me ask you, Numa, it has been challenging, of course, for live venues in this pandemic. You did get some help from the government with the Save Our Stages Act to keep the Florida Theater vibrant and strong, which is so important for this community. How are you handling things now as people are coming back to see live shows? We are still seeing ICUs fill up with COVID patients around this region. We are a hot spot. How do you manage that at the Florida Theater?
Well, like many businesses, COVID has affected us in very unpredictable and serious ways. If you'd told me on March 12 of 2020, which is the night we closed for 10 months, that we would have survived and we would be here now, I would have said you're crazy. We made it through because we did receive a lot of support from the government, from the city, the state and the federal government and our local business community. 100% of our business partners renewed their support last year, including our season sponsor, Community First Credit Union, which I think speaks to the Jacksonville community's support for the arts as a vital part of our life here in Jacksonville. You know, my hope is when we come out of the pandemic that one of the positive things that happens as a result is we have a greater understanding of the importance of the things that we lost during that time. We did open with a set of protocols in place, which have changed over the course of the 10-ish months that we've been open again. We're open now. We encourage everybody to get the vaccine. I'll say that again. We encourage everybody to get the vaccine. We encourage everybody to wear masks. And, you know, we tell customers every day, you know, we realize this is not over. We are open because we have a business to make sure doesn't die. But if you're uncomfortable going out now, uncomfortable going to the theater, please stay home, which is an odd message for a theater to be sending. And we tell people, you know, even if you have tickets and you're still uncomfortable, we're happy to refund them or exchange them for something in the future, because we understand everybody's got to make highly personal choices right now. And, you know, we want to be as cooperative with everybody and get through this together.
Right. And we are speaking with Numa Saisalan, president of the Florida Theater, about the new series, Untold Stories. The first themed evening, Ebbs and Flows, is coming up Saturday, November 27th. There will be follow-ups in February, April, and August of next year. And as you said, the great Barbara Colicello is your artistic director. Is it your hope that this sort of becomes an institution, that it keeps going?
Yeah, we certainly hope this keeps going. We have four programs booked for this year. We have support from the Wolfberg family, Brian and Jake Wolfberg, who came in to help us cover the bills for year number one so we can get this thing off the ground. And our thought is that there'll be a different artistic director every year, so we hear from diverse and new voices every year, and that, you know, in the long run, you know, 5-10 years from now, we're looking back at this as the birth of something, you know, brand new and ultimately iconic for Jacksonville.
Check it out now, folks. Go to Florida Theater's website, floridatheater.com, and get your tickets for the new debut of Untold Stories, kicking off Saturday, November 27th, 8 p.m. at the Florida Theater in downtown Jacksonville. floridatheater.com for more. President Numa Saisalan, always good to speak with you. Looks to be a great show. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Melissa. Have a great day.
You too. Well, a quick break, but in a moment, the Jaguars lose again in their second home game at the bank. Our own Josh Torres was there, and he has a look back at the team's misfortunes right after this, with some other sports news and notes, too. Don't go away. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
CNS Healthcare is offering an agitation associated with Alzheimer's dementia research study. Has Alzheimer's changed your loved one? Have they shown verbal or physical symptoms of agitation? Learn more at cnshealthcare.com. Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community.
featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at VickersLanding.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Ben Platt. He won a Tony for his performance as a teenager with extreme social anxiety in the hit Broadway musical Dear Evan Hansen. Platt now stars in the new film adaptation, and he has a new album. We'll talk about anxiety, growing up in a showbiz family, and more. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Richard Powers' prize-winning Overstory was both a celebration of the natural world and a call to arms to save it. In his latest novel, Bewilderment, a father and son confront a world seemingly bent on destruction. It's his 13th book, one Richard Powers said he'd never write. We'll ask him why he did when he joins us next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Hi, this is David McGowan, CEO here at WJCT Public Media. On behalf of our staff, our board of trustees, and the many thousands of people who make use of our services every day, I want to say a heartfelt thank you to everyone who supported our radio pledge drive this past week. When we say we can't do it without you, we really mean it, and we are truly grateful. Thank you.
Welcome back. Well, the Jaguars gave it their all yesterday against the Cardinals, but ultimately it wasn't enough. Our director, Josh Torres, was over at the bank, and he's getting increasingly depressed covering these losses. Hey, Josh, good morning.
Hello, Melissa. Hello, everybody. And I swear, Jags fans, one day I'm going to come on here, and I'm going to have some good news for everybody.
One day.
We're finally going to be celebrating. Yesterday was their second game at the bank, TIAA Bank Field. There was a lot of, you know, good things from last week. People were really hoping we could use some momentum, get through the Cardinals. They had someone flew a Lerp Jaguars banner over the stadium from a plane. There was a lot of hope. And, you know, the team really did show flashes of what they can do. The Jags started the first half with some good plays, but seemed to really be held in check. But then towards the end of the quarter, the end of the half and during the second quarter, the Jags did a great two-minute drill down the field through a perfectly placed TD pass to DJ Chark, who had the nice toe tap to keep it in, to actually tie the game at 7-all. And then easily the play of the game, the Cardinals got a small drive going, and then at the end of the half, they decided, you know what, let's try for a 68-yard field goal. Would have been the record-setting field goal if Matt Prater had made it. He missed it, and then it happened. Jamal Agnew, a free agent pickup by the Jags, returned it 109 yards to the house to give the Jags their first lead of the season. Everybody in the stadium was going crazy. Mm-hmm. He had a 102-yard kick return last week. Easily is showing that he is one of the best return man in the league right now. If he can continue this momentum that he has, but then in the second half, it started to go wrong. The Jags started off great. James Robinson, they are finally using him in the run game, something that a lot of people have pointed out they have not been doing, especially after season after he rushed for 1,000 yards last year as an undrafted free agent. And he capped it off with a great touchdown run to start the second half off. Then the Cardinals came back quickly, made it a one-score game, made the game 19-17. And then it happened. A play that I feel like is going to haunt the Jags for a little while. They called a flea flicker maneuver. And by the time Trevor got the ball, there was already a man in his face. And then he threw a pick six. And the Cardinals took the lead, and they did not relinquish it. This was definitely a game that I feel that the offense absolutely let the team down. There were some flashes, and that's the worst part. Trevor really, you see the mistakes he's made. He's thrown 7 interceptions. He had 2 fumbles yesterday, including one where James Robinson ran into him as he was going to throw the ball, so it was ruled a fumble. but he has shown flashes of what he can do, and that's the worst part is you see these flashes and you see how well this offense can come together, but then the mistakes just make it all the worse, especially when he throws a pick six on a play that a lot of people feel shouldn't happen. They were inside their own 20-yard line. It was second down and six. That's not a play you call. You don't call a flea flicker on that kind of a play, and so it's definitely going to haunt them pretty badly for a while, and of course, unfortunately, the Jags did and go on to lose the game, and this marks
18 regular season games in a row they've lost.
18 regular seasons since last year.
I mean, the fan base, how are they even going to keep the fan base at this point?
The fans, I think, really, they come out for the tailgates, and then they hope for a miracle at this point, so it's definitely hurts a lot when there was so much hype around this season, and to see this happening, and they're going to have to turn
around. Right, the talent that they brought in, and then they can't get it together. Yeah. It's such a shame.
And they're going to have to turn it around very quickly because they're going to travel to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals this Thursday night on Thursday Night Football. So they're going to have a very quick turnaround.
Let's hope so. Okay, lots of college action, which you tracked in between your time in the Jaguars press box. Tell us about that.
Yep, so we're going to quickly go through some college scores. Georgia is continuing their absolute domination of teams. They won against Vanderbilt in Nashville 62-0. They put up 62 points. Vanderbilt had 77 total yards of offense the entire game. That is just absolutely insane. Georgia's really trying to make a statement that they deserve to get into the college football playoffs and finally take home the national championship. And then we go down to Miami, who finally got a nice win against Central Connecticut State. They blew out the Blue Devils 69-0. Miami QB Tyler Van Dyke went 10 for 11 for 270 yards, three touchdown passes, and his backup Jake Garcia threw for 147 yards and two touchdowns. And then we continue with the woes of the Florida State Seminoles as they lost again at home to Louisville, and they're starting 0-4 for the first time since, I believe, 1974. And you know, the Seminoles at one point trailed 31-7, but they nearly came back and they only lost 31-23. So there are sparks in that team, and they just really got to get it turned around, really get something going to get something out of this season. Last game we're going to talk about is UF. They took on Tennessee. Actually, this week the Gators had some good news as Olympic gold medalist Katie Ledecky announced that she would, as she trained for the 2024 Olympic Games, she was going to be a volunteer coach for the Gator swim team and the Gator football team. They took down Tennessee 38-14 thanks to a beautiful second half where they scored 21 unanswered points.
All right. Josh Torres, follow him on Twitter at Josh is a polar bear. It's because he always wears shorts. It's his signature. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you, Melissa.
And thanks for directing this show, too, along with producers Heather Schatz and Catherine Hobbs. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.